Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and are always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to your What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is debut author Micaiah Beigel. Her debut novel, Night Stranger, was nominated for the Center for Fiction Award. In this episode, we chat about her writing process, her journey to publishing, and finally, rounded book recommendations. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Micaiah. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I live in Vermont. I teach at Vermont College of Fine Arts in the MFA in Writing and Publishing program, and I also coordinate the Vermont Book Award, which I love because I, you know, it's about sort of honoring writers and giving a prize to a Vermont writer. I'm a mom. I have 3 kids, a stepdaughter, and then 2 little kids. And I've been, a writer as long as I can remember, writing fiction, writing stories and essays. And now Goodnight Stranger is my first book, and it's only been out for about 3 weeks.
It's amazing. So what was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, it was long. It was a long journey. I mean, I don't even remember a time when I didn't want to be a writer. This is the sort of biggest, longest, fiercest dream of my life. I studied writing in undergrad, and I wrote after college, and then I finally went to graduate school and got my MFA at Syracuse, studied writing. And then I sat down to write this novel at some point. And the process sort of between when I first sat down to write the novel and finally seeing it in front of me has been more than 15 years. So a lot happens. The big pieces, like how this finally came about. I mean, I wrote a draft of the novel. I rewrote. I got it into as good a shape as I could. And then I, right around the time when I thought, I'm ready to try to get an agent. You know, I have this draft now. Around that time, I sold an essay to Tin House. And I thought, oh, this is great. This felt like a really good publication. So, you know, pretty high profile for me. So I thought, this is my chance to have my writing out in the world. And I'm going to just mention in my bio that I've just finished my first novel. And if the right agent happens to see this and see my bio, they'll reach out to me. And it happened that way. My wonderful agent, got in touch with me and said, oh, I just saw your essay in Tin House, and I mentioned in your bio you were working on your first novel. Do you have an agent yet? And she actually wrote that to me. I happened to be in labor with my youngest child when I got that email, so I can remember exactly when it was. So that was 6 years ago, exactly. So I sent her the manuscript, and she got back to me within 24 hours and said, I like it. I want to work with you, but we have to do a lot of work on it. But I'll work with you on it, which was like a really beautiful thing to hear. I love that. I said, of course, I love your input and I want to work with you. And so we revised together for a couple of years and thought it was finished. And so my agent is Jenny Ferrari Adler of Union Literary, and she's super hands-on. So we had long conversations. She helped, she did line editing at different points. We sent it out at that point when we thought it was ready, and it didn't sell. And so of course I was devastated. We went, kind of back to the drawing board. We had got a lot of notes from very kind editors who said that they liked it and would be happy to look at a revision, but it wasn't quite there. They had a lot of questions about narrative tension. So we kind of went back to the drawing board. I have really wonderful writer friends who helped me figure out sort of what was going on. We revised for another 2 years. And then I met my current editor, Laura Brown, at Park Row, and we kind of met before she had even seen the manuscript, and really loved each other. And then she, you know, Jenny sent her the manuscript, and at that point it sold after all that work and after, you know, a lot of doubt and fears that maybe it never would find its right home. So it's been like a dream working with Laura Brown at Park Row and working with that publisher. It's been really wonderful. So I feel like it did find the perfect home eventually.
That's amazing. That's really good to hear. I know it's a process. I think sometimes you expect, like, you write it, you put it in the agenda, and then the process is supposed to be faster, but the reality it takes time to nourish a book. And this book has been nominated. So this is amazing to witness the journey and to see the final product now.
Yeah. It's been really wonderful.
So let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
Well, I definitely didn't have an outline with this book. And, you know, I mean, it took so long to work on it. I've been thinking maybe I need to have an outline for the next one. You know, I think there's sort of a time in the writing process when an outline serves a writer best. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I don't know that I would want to think through the entire plot ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You know, I usually start with some kind of interesting question or interesting premise that presents a, you know, a puzzle that I don't know the solution to when I begin, mm-hmm. and I have to write my way into it a little bit. But and I like that I start with the same mystery, you know, that readers start with, mm-hmm. but when they're reading the work. But I think that at some point it probably is a great idea for me to impose. Once I know the answers, then I think it's time to go back and impose an outline on the book to kind of help it find a really beautiful structure that will sort of serve the story best. So, you know, it's just a matter of when that is. With my new project I'm working on, I'm letting myself explore and write now. But at some point I'm going to say, okay, enough of that. It's time to sort of find the form that's best for it. And, you know, because I want to write this next book more quickly. So we'll see. I think that, you know, I mean, that's a great question. And I think the answer is I did things one way for the first book, but I think I can grow and change and learn and try new things as a writer. So it might be totally different for book two.
Yeah, I think each book can be its own different beast of it. Some books are easy to read, some easy to write. And other books are really difficult. You may have an idea, you may have characters, but it may be a struggle to get it out of the system. You know, but just as important books to read.
Right.
How do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you track your ideas, inspirations, and characters?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, I think maybe I don't organize myself as a writer very well. I have no, you know, my problem is that writing for me is so integrated into my daily life and my daily thinking that I don't have sort of a special time when I go and I'm writing, and I don't have even a special space, you know, where I don't have an office where that is where I do my writing. I mean, I'm literally sitting in my closet right now to record this because my children are being put to bed in the other room. And I, you know, so, you know, as somebody who sort of has this busy family and, busy work life, and I'm sort of writing everywhere and thinking of ideas. Some of my best ideas have come to me when I'm like driving the kids to school or, you know, walking somewhere. So I keep notes in notebooks and in files on my computer and on scraps of paper. And, And I keep a lot just in my head. You know, I think through whole scenes, just play them out in my mind, like I'm watching a movie or something, or remembering something, even though I'm making it up. You know, so I don't know that I have interesting ways of keeping track of, you know, my ideas and my characters, except for that I'm always thinking about them and I try to jot things down. I think I forget a lot that I wish I didn't forget. I wish I sort of kept track of it in a more organized way. But I also think it's just how my mind has to work. It's a way of sort of living the characters and living through those ideas in scene. That's just how I have to do it.
Are you working on a new book? Now you're working on a new book?
I'm working on a new book. I haven't, just for the past few months, I haven't had very much time to work on the new book because I've been on book tour for Good Night Stranger, and I've been working on a lot of shorter essays. But I'm really excited for, I feel like in September, I'm going to get back down to work on my new project that I'm really excited about. So yeah, I'm planning to try to throw myself into it as much as I can.
That'll be exciting. So will you share your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for your agent or for others to read?
You know, I have had hard and fast rules for myself in the past about whether to show my work along the way, whether to share it. And it sometimes works better for me not to show anybody, just because then I sort of, it's like the idea is bubbling inside of me and I have more, there's a pressure almost building to get it out. And then if I tell someone about it or share something along the way, I lose some of that beautiful pressure that's building. So I want to kind of keep it to help me, you know, get the work onto the page. But I do, you know, I have writing friends who I do think it helps just to show it to them. I mean, I think this is a new project. I only have about 10,000 words and people have seen that. A few of my writing friends have seen that and it helped me know I was on the right track and what was really working. I think at some point when I have a little more, I definitely will want to share it with my agent, get her feedback about how it's going. You know, it's hard because you don't want to be too influenced by someone else's aesthetics until you're firmly entrenched in the project, I guess. So it's, again, like finding the perfect point at which it's safe to share it.
Yeah, I can imagine just thinking about it, just because you may not know who the story leads to, and so you may be influenced by somebody else's idea, and it may just not be the right fit for the story. So maybe wait until you kind of like flesh it all out to then have another person's ideas or another person's point of view to give you to hide the story.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. I think that's a good point.
Yeah. So now let's talk about Good Night Stranger. So Good Night Stranger is a unique story of grief, mystery, and a stranger coming to town and someone taking over the main character's life. Is that a good synopsis of the book, or am I missing something?
Yeah, I think that sums it up. That's a really good way of saying what it's about, for sure.
So, talk to us about Lydia. When did you start to write this character?
Right. Well, so Lydia is the narrator. And she is, I love her. I mean, she's my character. I really love her. I feel like her, so Lydia's deal, you know, she's in her late 20s. She lives on this island. It's a fictional island, but it's in a real place, if that makes sense. It's called Wolf Island, but it's right off of Martha's Vineyard in Cape Cod. And she lives with her twin brother, Lucas, who is sort of pathologically shy, you know, can't go to the grocery store, can't call someone on the phone. She is his link to other people, if that makes sense. So she really feels like she needs to stay there with him, taking care of their parents have died. She is really his caretaker. And she loves her better, and she loves her home, but she also resents being trapped there. And mm-hmm. that kind of push and pull is really defining for her. She has a deep love for her home, and she is deeply resentful that she did not get to choose the future, a future for herself, the way other young people do, you know, she feels. And so that is something, you know, that is kind of the elements, you know, that's the core of her character, I would say. And one of the things that she's dealing with throughout the book, you know, and then of course that the sort of these twins, Lydia and Lucas, are haunted, have been haunted their whole life by the idea that they know that they were actually born triplets, and their triplet died in infancy. And, you know, all their lives they've thought about what their life would have been like if this sibling had survived. You know, they're sort of haunted by what could have been, how they would be different, how their lives would be different. So, you know, that's sort of where she stands in the beginning. And then the events of the novel, I think, help her work through some of that crisis, that push and pull of kind of what might have been, what is, the past, the present, the future, loving her home, feeling resentful of her home, all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was an interesting character to dive into, because I can see the grief, I can see the sense of feeling trapped, but at the same time, trying to come on her own, and how beautiful her story arc actually evolves. You know, and when we introduce different characters, when she faces leaving the island and finding herself having a panic attack and still going through and still working her way through it. That was a beautiful arc to see.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the interesting things, is that she feels so trapped there. And then it becomes clear at one point in the book that the things that are trapping her there are not all external to her, right? Mm-hmm. That some of them are inside. So that is just a kind of interesting realization for the readers, but for her, you know, for her to understand that about herself.
That was a big one. Yeah. So you mentioned Lucas, who's painfully shy or pathologically shy, and he doesn't connect with everyone. He really just stays is an introvert. He stays with himself, but somehow he meets Cole, and there's like an intense relationship with him.
Yeah.
How much of the grief of Baby B led him to believe that Cole was Colin or Baby B? Or was it just that he just felt connected with this person, and he just built this intense relationship?
Yeah, I mean, what I believe, you know, when someone is that haunted their whole life by missing someone, you know, who has died, but also, I mean, Lucas has believed his whole life that his brother who died will return to him some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he has, since childhood, you know, this is his belief system. It is just the way things are for him. His dead brother will come back to him somehow. So he's just waiting for that, you know, and he's, you know, there's as a child, and then, you know, he used to light candles to try to bring his dead sibling back, and he would play certain music that he thought Baby B would like, and he would bake these cinnamon cookies that the smell he thought would drift out and bring the baby brother, you know, home.
Mm-hmm.
And so the stranger shows up on the island, and it's just like two threads, you know, coming together and meeting. And Lucas, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, you know, if you haven't read it, but Lucas just really believes that this stranger is Baby B, his dead brother, who has returned to him somehow in this new form. He's reborn, you know, as this other person. And there's a lot of things that just line up that make him believe that. I mean, you know, the stranger has a tattoo that is meaningful to Lucas, and the stranger seems to, you know, one of the early things is that he skips a rock at the exact place on the beach where Lucas has always stopped and skipped a rock. you know, and he's just so wants it to be true that he's willing to see these things as not coincidences or weird in some other way. He sees these things as proof that this is his brother. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, the question is about, you know, is his grief over Baby B leads him to feel that connection to the stranger, Cole. And I think it absolutely does. It's the grief, but it's also this faith he's had his whole life that, mm-hmm. that his brother will return to him. And, you know, then here's the stranger. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and Cole was an interesting character. I mean, we got to know him through Lydia's eyes, and we got to see how, in some ways, he was taking over the relationship between Lucas and Lydia, and just the relationship with, you know, in the town, just how infiltrated. Cole was just, he was an interesting mystery to unravel, and it was a
pleasure
to do it.
Yeah, he is. I mean, there's a lot of that to him, right? He's like really charismatic and, you know, attentive, and, you know, there's a lot of wonderful things about him, and then there are things that feel off or mm-hmm. scary or just something doesn't quite feel right, but he's such a kind of warm, vibrant force mm-hmm. that it's hard to resist. He's magnetic. So, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I would encourage our listeners who haven't read the book to read the book and to uncover Cole as a character, because that's where a lot of the mysteries, a lot of the answers get revealed throughout the book. He seems to be kind of like an onion that just gets layers upon layers upon layers that Lydia gets to discover throughout the story.
Oh, that's great. I love that metaphor. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. So now let's get to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Well, my favorite genre, I mean, I love I would say it's literary fiction, but I mm-hmm. happen to love literary fiction that has a strange, bizarre, or otherworldly element mm-hmm. to it.
So who's your favorite author?
I didn't choose just one.
You can choose like, multiple.
I need to say a few. I love Wilkie Collins, who was a contemporary of Dickens, mm-hmm. Who wrote, I think, most famous for The Moonstone or The Woman in White. Mm-hmm. I love Shirley Jackson. I adore Shirley Jackson, short stories and novels, and her nonfiction. And then just in terms of contemporary writers, I'm really crazy about Catherine Davis, Kelly Link, and George Saunders.
I love it. What are your top three favorite books of all time?
Top three favorite books of all time. I'll say The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley mm-hmm. Jackson. Mm-hmm. Mr. Splitfoot by Samantha Hunt, which I think is the most romantic book ever written. And then The Stories of John Cheever.
I love it. What has been a book that you read this year that you love?
Okay, well, I'm reading it now. I think I'll finish it tonight before bed. I'm right near the end of it. It's called The Changeling by Victor Laval, and it is so exciting.
What's the book about?
It's like a dark fairy tale that mm-hmm. takes place in a very recognizable world. So, you know, some people would call it a horror story, and it is scary, but it's not... to me it feels so recognizable, and it's about a young couple falling in love, getting married, having a baby, and then things go weird with the baby. And it is just beautiful and fascinating and scary and so exciting. I really love it. I can't believe I didn't read it before this. I mean, I think it's only came out maybe last year, you know, it's a pretty new book, but it is so good. It's really great.
I love when that happens. I love when we find books that are so great that we just want to dive into them and see what happens.
Yeah. Yes, totally.
So tell us where we can find you online.
Oh, sure. Well, my website is www.MikayaBayGalt.com.
Thank you, Mikaya.
And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram, too.
Perfect. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. This was really great to talk about writing and talk about books.
Thank you, Micaiah, for a great interview. For show notes on the list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back Thursday with another author interview. Have a great rest of the week.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.